Kojo.
Yeah, I think everyone can hear you pretty clearly. Kojo, is your camera on?
Is my what on?
Is your camera on?
No, it's on.
Okay. Maybe, I think the audience would like to...
Just to make audio better.
Okay, sure, we can...
No, put it on. Try putting it on.
Okay.
It's a pretty good connection.
Okay.
Okay. So if you could also welcome to the stage Angelica Saga, Anton, and Rolf Hind. No, not right now. Is Rolf? Oh, okay.
So I'm here with Elaine.
Okay.
It's very frozen.
Okay, so maybe we should go without the image for the time being. Yeah? Maybe we should go without the image for the time being, seeing as we can't seem to bring it up.
Kojo, just put the camera on and off again. Keep trying, please.
Okay, camera.
Should we want to take one of these things?
Yeah. It's off. And then back again.
Okay, we can see you now.
Okay.
Hey, brilliant.
It's Elaine.
Well, let's
go. Okay.
Elaine.
So we've just all seen the film, and seeing as you weren't given a chance to speak beforehand, we were wondering if you'd like to just maybe speak about the origins of the project and how it came into being. Just start off with.
Did you hear that? Did you hear that, Kojo?
Okay. Can everyone? I heard it. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Yep. Okay, great. Well, briefly, there's a long-standing interest. So yes. Next to me, I'm very pleased to have Elaine Mitch in there. You know, who's in these moments. And really, after many years of thinking about Eastern composition and how to make a work that not only depicts an Eastman performance, but in some way transposes some of the sonic processes and some of the sonic attitudes into a visual performance, so that everything from the camera to editing to makeup to lighting, that everything is informed by a kind of by Julius Eastman's thinking and his methods and his principles. I mean, after years of thinking about this, we decided it was time to make a work, to make a statement. There was just a sense that the kind of interest around Eastman's moving beyond a kind of a few, you know, almost like a kind of secret society of Eastman devotees. There was a sense that the times, the urgencies and the intensities of the times had made Eastman current for us in a new way. And I just had this sense that we must move and make this statement. And so there was an opportunity. There was some commissions, which, you know, some different institutions wanted us to make new work, and like, this is our chance. this is our chance to make this work, which really I've been thinking about since 2007. So, and as soon as we did, as soon as we started to think about it, it felt as if all around us, you know, different people seemed to come to the same conclusion. You know, so we start thinking about this in 2015. In 2016, we have the London Contemporary Music Festival. At the end of 2016, and that's where we were lucky enough to see, you know, Elaine, to see Rolf and Zubin and Siwan and Eliza, and then to realize that there are these musicians who really had studied and had worked out a kind of mode of performance for working with Eastman. Set these performances in a particular kind of landscape that could speak to the present and the future.
Okay, it's a little bit in and out because of the connection, maybe. You want to talk a little bit, maybe we could talk a little bit also about the intention behind it in relation to the times, and sort of maybe we could talk a little bit about the why we front and back ended the piece with Dante and with Elaine. Elaine repeating the introduction that... that Julius Eastman, this is a reenactment of Julius Eastman's introduction to the playing of these three pieces at Northwestern University in 1980, right? And you know, I was thinking about the use of the N word in relation to these times, where, let's say, the abject viral provocation of hip hop hadn't got its global kind of. What's that noise? It's terrible noises. Hadn't got its kind of global power that it has now. So this is 1980. I just said the kind of viral, abject provocation of the N-word via hip-hop hadn't sort of, in 1980, wasn't as kind of globally present as it is now for many people. So the use of this word by Eastman, it's very direct, you know. He talks about this. He uses this term, you know, in relation to a value system, an economic value system, but then to test it when it's tested on two performers speaking this word, it's also testing them. So the grating of it is very kind of present in their bodies. At least that's what. I felt when they were performing, and when you see it again. So maybe this is also a way to, actually, if Rolf Hind isn't going to come to the stage, do you know where he is? No.
Well, maybe
Dante. Would you like to? Because that would be. Somebody could just go and get him, or maybe Dante would also like to come. Sorry, Kojo.
I think this would be a good chance to hear from Elaine, because you know, we have a certain set of intentions, but those intentions need to be enacted and embodied and. Charged with the electric mode. So I think it'd be great to hear a bit about Elaine, about the beginning and the endings of the work.
Thank you. being asked to be part of this film was I was really intrigued about what I would be required to do, and then when I was told it would be to recite this text, I found it a huge challenge to do that because I've never said the word nigger. I've never used that word because of the history behind it, the connotations. But having understood more about his philosophy and have come through the performance of his work with Apartment House at LCMF in 2016, I felt there was so much love and humanity about this man and about him, that there was some way he was trying to reclaim that word that so negative, has so many negative connotations, not empower it, but find a strength behind it. And being asked to repeat someone else's text is always a difficult task. So you have to find your own way through. And I had to personalize it for myself as well. And
I think maybe if you actually turn off the video, it's better because it's getting stuck all the time.
Yes, Eastman, I'm not him. So I was coming with his history and his feelings and his emotions, but I understood as much as I could. And in that he felt about why he had titled those pieces in that way. And because I was able to represent it for this film, and I just wanted to do justice to his words.
Thank you. There was a few.
I don't know if I can actually.
No, I think that was a very interesting.
But I keep going back to the.
So maybe Dante, you would like to come to the stage because Rolf Hind seems to have. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Thank you for joining us. So maybe it would be interesting to, as I say, reflect on your, you know, role in the film and your performance and how you were channeling and portraying Julius's words.
Well, I'm not a performer. I'm a poet. And I think people often think that because I'm a poet, I'm a performer. But I often get asked to be the sort of straight voice in things like this. So the task that I gave myself was I think different from Elaine's. So we have an audio recording of Eastman. And so my first step was to transcribe what he was saying for accuracy. And then it was to alter my transcription for his emphasis. But again, being a poet, the way that I approach any text is certainly one that I'm dealing with, that I'm going to speak in front of, in this case a camera, but to a larger audiences. I can't divorce my own syntax from that. So that's sort of a separate artistic kind of process. But then my own personal engagement with Eastman is that I knew him and I knew his music, and I'm quite a fan of his music. So it was to be a black, gay, American man in England, asked by all of these artists to participate in this was an interesting thing, because for me, I am used to the word nigger. I'm exposed to it. I have been exposed to it in the literature of my country, on the street growing up, it being used, being called it as an epithet. So it was, to me, Eastman was using the word not to reclaim it, but actually to provoke. And it's very difficult to explain to a non-black person the kind of crisis on a white person's face when another black person says that word, because you see them feel sorry for you because of all of the history of that word. So I think that is why Eastman used titled the compositions in the way that he did. And I and when you listen to his recording and when you think about where he is when he's saying this and the audience, what the audience must have looked like in 1980 in Rochester, New York, I think it was, you know that he's doing it to provoke them.
Thank you very much. And Anton, as part of Apartment House, you've been, you know, restaging works of marginal or perhaps forgotten composers. So I think it'd be really interesting if you can say a little bit about, you know, what Apartment House does, and also like how you have also approached Eastman and the kind of potential issues you encounter when the, you know, Eastman archive is kind of, you know, fragmented and splintered in the way which it is.
Okay, hello. Apartment House is an experimental music group, and I formed it in 1995. And I've sort of always been interested in kind of forgotten people. I don't see for me, contemporary music history has always been a form of propaganda, and it's always been controlled by institutions and publishers, basically. So there's lots of marginal figures. I mean, it's the same in visual art as well. I mean, people are always being rediscovered, and everyone says, oh, that's actually rather good. And they wonder why those people were forgotten about. I've always been focused on, I mean, we do play more famous people like John Cage, etc. But I've always been interested in reassembling works. A lot of experimental pieces need a lot of dedication in order to, I just love Skype. It's always rubbish, isn't it? Skype is always rubbish. I've given up on it myself. But I think Elaine's doing a piece now. But going to Julius's music, I met actually Mary Jane Leach in 98 in New York City, because we had a lot of friends in common. And so I knew of Julius's work, and obviously his association with other people like Morton Feldman and other performers, etc. But it's only recently that, of course, all the history, there's been a book published about his work, and the tragedy of his life has come much more into focus. But working with the scores, there are problems, because some scores don't exist. All we have are some transcriptions. Some scores are in bits. I mean, we perform a piece called Feminine, which is 75 minutes. All we have is a pencil draft score, which is a complete mystery at times. But we have archive recordings to refer to as well. So generally, it takes a lot of work to put the music together. But it's actually, paradoxically, it's also quite easy to do it, even with the basic material, because of the nature of the music, because it's very organic. It uses little cells which get repeated and extended, etc. And it just sounds good. And when you're in it, when you're performing it, it's an ecstatic experience. And that is how you can pull through with the work. So it is problematic. And I believe his estate has been taken up by Schirmer, the music publishers in New York City. And I think the editing process is going to be a complete nightmare. I mean, seriously, I think it is. It will be. But I think there are enough people in the communities in different countries who are working on his music. So, and Mary Jane's very savvy. So I think there will be some good coming out of that. So there you go.
Thank you. Perhaps Angelica, you could respond to, I guess, these mirroring throughout the film, whether it's, you know, this kind of literal, like asymmetrical mirroring we see in the images, or through the speakers at the beginning and the end, and this kind of constant kind of asymmetrical mirroring which happens throughout the film.
Yes, I mean, I think there was a lot. There's, you know, the work for us bringing this piece of work into the context of this installation piece, and you know, working on this performance with the you know, brilliant ensemble of pianists, was a way to, you know, pay justice to the kind of legacy of Eastman and the fact that the racist kind of suffering that he endured in the new music scene that I would say continues in many ways, you know, and is analyzed by many, you know, black musicians who participate in this music scene to this day, who themselves have to deal with this kind of problem. So for me, this has always been present for not only figures like Eastman, but others. So for I think for us, the question of light as this, you know, in that invocation by Eastman of light was, there was another way to, let's say, refract it, and that was through Edouard Glissant, the Caribbean poet and theorist, who, in his writing on opacity, you know, writes about opacity as a way, which it, is our right to kind of avoid the transparency of Western civilization, that Western civilization presents itself as transparent power. This sense of opacity was, you know, a way to work with this idea of transparency, of transparent objects that allow light to pass through them as such, without question. And in this case, we wanted to think about Eastman's invocation to more light, the amplification of light, using reflection and refraction of light as it bounds and extends and illuminates from the surface of the piano's black surface, shiny surface. Opacity for Glissant isn't is not a field of inverse light that absorbs, but rather a space that throws light back. And I think when people read Glissant's notion of opacity, they mistake it with a space of absorption. For us, it was in this sense, the piano kind of provided this, let's say, sonic architecture to think about how light works. So we worked with this, as you can see, this frame of light, of LED lights above the pianos, and then they, and then worked with the different angles to create all these, like this kind of cage almost of light around the performers. The makeup was a way to, let's say, enhance the kind of sense of the intersectionality, the politics of intersectionality that Eastman, you know, raises or offers us. The question of being a militant guerrilla, being gay, being black, and the performers, and Eastman's call to the performers as gay guerrillas of the future. This is what we were kind of interested in. How do we think about this intersectionality and a unity within this intersectionality? So the makeup was just a sort of mirror of the light fitting itself, but then served as a way to kind of bind the performers. And they were extremely elegant and kind of almost looked like futuristic figures in a way. So kind of upright and elegant and... and all in black. So somebody said at the end, somebody said in Berlin when we screened the installation there, that they look like almost court, they look like they're in a court or they're standing trial. And when Elaine is speaking, they look as if they're like sort of being, they're in a court of some kind, which I thought was a nice... idea. But Kojo, maybe you want to say something about that as well?
Sure. I think what you point to is this question of esprit de corps, this this sense of a unit who are bound together by a cause greater than themselves. You know, so the idea that the gay guerrillas come from Eastman's future, you know, the future in 1980 is clearly our future in 2017. The idea being that the gay guerrillas are summoned to come to the aid of our present. The idea being that the video is a study in the kinds of you know, the kinds of gestural language of concentration, focus, determination, and a kind of internal spiritual struggle, and a certain kind of militancy.
Mm-hmm, you just froze.
Mathematatorship itself, spectator, is a way to build a solidarity and build a relationship of forces to what Julius Eastman calls black forces. So that's part of what's going on.
I think we're being hurried out.
Maybe so we could have two, three questions now, because we have only got till 4 o'clock, you see.
So does anyone in the audience who has any question want to relate to any of the panel or
it's four
Kojo
o'clock.
Via Skype? Yep.
Should I speak without a mic?
I think there's a gentleman behind you with a mic. So.
Thanks very much. I'd love it if someone could say something about the third measure, the thirdness, and Eastman's view of the organic. Because it seemed just now that you complicated his invocation of light with Glisson's notion of opacity. I was wondering, in the structure of the performance, whether you sought to complicate the notion of thirdness, because there was a triptych element to it in the sequence, but there was something very bicameral about it. And I was wondering whether you felt the organic needed to be... I see there's some response, big response going on in the background. But just if you could say more about what your thinking was about whether thirdness was possible at this point.
Kojo, do you want to answer that? But you know what? Maybe sure. Turn off the camera. Sure. Turn off the camera. Turn off the camera, please, because it is... sorry, I'm very bossy. Because I think it's just cutting out too much. So, can you hear us? Can we hear you?
Sure.
Very good.
Yes.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Did you hear the question?
Yes, I did.
Very good.
Yeah, I think Eastman's notion of organic music, just as his notion of music as information, and music as thirdness, these are all parts of a kind of mobile musical methodology, and so as you intuited, part of what we wanted to do was to take some of this method and to draw out a certain audiovisual language. So in a way, we wanted a three-part film on two screens. So that, you know, the video seems to be based on doublings, you know, Dante and Elaine, two pianists on one piano, matching two pianists on another piano, two screens, everything seems to be doubled and mirrored. But actually, you know, you see that those doublings turn into, you know, quadruples, so there's a kind of multiplication of those doublings. And at the same time, this notion of a third, this notion of a kind of three-part structure starts to interfere. And in a way, what we wanted to do was suggest these different structuring ideas, but suggest them in the most, really the most reduced way possible. So in a way, the video could not be more simplified. but yet it manages to carry with it quite complex ideas of structure. And that's because the ultimate aim is not to make a video in which the music is the soundtrack. We don't want the music to serve the image. We don't want the music to be in a relation of structured secondariness or structured subordination. If anything, it's the almost the other way around. We somehow wanted the music to both drive the image, and wanted the image to be so these effects that you notice, these structures are all part of the attempt to make, you know, not an image of music, but something like a kind of something like a becoming sonic of performance.
Okay.
I think we are being pushed out now.
We are being literally chucked out now. Yeah. So
I just want to take this opportunity to thank I've got Angelica.
Thank you.
Dante, thank Anton. And in Berlin, to thank Elaine and Kojo. It's been a perhaps too brief conversation.
Okay, then. But there's some wonderful things.
Okay, thank you very much.
Hi to everybody in London.
Cheers.